5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to the Donut Racing Show, everybody, where we bring an oscillating sprinkler in the front yard mindset to the infinity pool with a private grotto and swim-up bar world of Formula One. I came up with that one. How do you?
I thought it was fantastic, Nolan. That was really, really great. Good job.
My name is Nolan Sykes. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, auto journalists, authors, motorsports lovers, Elizabeth Blackstock.
Good morning.
And Alanis King.
Hi, and this week we are going to talk about the crown jewel of Formula One, the 2023 Monaco Grand Prix. But first, how was everybody's weekend, Nolan?
Well, you know, when I was writing that intro, I just started thinking about Whammo slip and slides.
Okay.
And how much I miss those, and how much I'd probably damage one if I used one now. I promise we'll get to the Monaco Grand Prix, but we have something very exciting to talk about. You guys had a little trip to Indianapolis for a little motor race they had out there this weekend. How was that?
Elizabeth, what happened out there?
A lot. So many things all the time forever, and I will never recover. And it's great. One of my favorite drivers won. I've been waiting to see Joseph Newgarden win since I went to my first Indy 500, but we were guests of Honda, so I could not be happy.
Oh.
I had to be quiet.
Oh,
you
had to be
you had to say boo.
Yeah, I had to boo him because he passed Marcus Ericsson, who's a Honda driver.
Oh, yeah. Of course, we're talking about the Indianapolis 500. Congrats to Joseph Newgarden. Best teeth in motorsports, I think. Very handsome guy.
Mm-hmm.
Glad to see he won. Very emotional finish.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do the Spider-Man climb over the fence, climbed under the fence into the crowd, not close to where a tire almost flew into the audience. We're going to not talk about that.
Oh, no.
but yeah, very emotional. I was watching the race on an airplane on my flight back from Atlanta, and I teared up. I almost started crying.
I have a new theory, actually, because Ryan Blaney won the Coke 600, and everybody really thinks Joseph Newgarden and Ryan Blaney are cute. So my question is, they're both Penske drivers. Does Roger Penske decide who he's hiring based on who he thinks is cute?
I don't think so, because we've got Will Power and Scott McLaughlin as well. And Austin Cindric. Like, you've got to have, like, the linchpin, the one that holds down the fort. You've got Joseph in IndyCar, and you've got Ryan in NASCAR. You just got to have the one. It was a great weekend to be Roger Penske's most handsomest boys.
It's so true. It really was. It was also a great weekend to be us. We had a wonderful time. Elizabeth and I were with each other for like 4 days straight. It was fantastic.
I watched you eat so many bread products.
Okay. Well, so I have a thing where I love bread. And so at breakfast, I eat bread. And then at lunch, I eat bread. And at dinner, I eat bread. And I had one lunch where I ate macaroni and cheese and cheese cubes. And then I had one lunch where I ate an entire tray of mashed potatoes. And everybody was like, why didn't you get something else? And I was like, well, why would I get something else if I wanted the mashed potatoes? Why not just get more mashed potatoes? And then at dinner one night, I ordered a whole loaf of bread and I offered it to the table. And everybody ate it. And that wasn't what was supposed to happen.
All right. All right. You didn't merely offer. You did not say, do you guys want some bread? And when everyone said no, you did not leave it at that. When they said no, you said, are you sure? There's two loaves here. Do you want some bread?
It had to seem sincere, and everyone was supposed to say no. When Jesus breaks the bread and offers it to the table, you say, no, Jesus, you eat the bread.
I feel like Jesus would want me to eat the bread.
Yes.
Then maybe I read that story wrong. That wasn't even the most exciting part of the weekend, but I think that's going to be what everyone remembers. Elizabeth and I got to go on the grid at the Indy 500, which was super fun. We saw Kyle Larson out there. We saw a bunch of famous people. And then I saw a guy and I looked at that man and I went, that looks exactly like retired NASCAR driver Paul Menard. Paul, once he retired from NASCAR, escaped from the public eye.
Really?
And so I walk up to him and I go, I'm sorry to bother you, but you look exactly like Paul Menard. And he was like, I am Paul Menard. And I freaked out. I was like, oh my God, you have no idea. My husband is the biggest Paul Menard fan in history. And he was like, are you not the biggest Paul Menard fan in history? And I was like, no, I am. We have three of your NASCAR bumpers in our house. Like, they're hanging on the walls. And he was like, I hope I kept them clean for you. Like, I hope I didn't wreck them or anything. I was like, no, they're perfect, Paul. So I give Paul this little double high five. And then I look at my phone and Elizabeth has taken this photo of us. And we're in the corner, like holding hands with our double high five, just like fingers interlaced, double high five. And it's the cutest photo that's ever been taken. It's my favorite photo in history. I think it even rivals the photo of me with Chris Angel. So
we're glad to hear that Paul Menard is alive and well, living the ideal life, no social media. Liz, did you have any spectacular moments at the Indy 500?
You know, I don't think I had any Paul Menard-worthy moments, but I did get to hang out with a lot of my friends who I haven't seen in forever, which is really nice. My friend Remy and I went to our first Indy 500 ever together in 2016, and they came this year for the first time in like 4 years. Nice. So we got to hang out. My friend Jay always brings me Spotted Cow. My friend Jason bought a whole cake.
It nice. Was amazing because we had a little meetup for our Rich Energy book. And we said, if you want to get it signed, come to this. We're going to be right here. We're going to be here for 30 minutes. We stayed for 2 hours. And then we had the cake and we had the beer. And some people brought some Jello shots.
Dang. Sounds like it was an awesome time. But another race happened across the world.
Oh.
Over there in Monte Carlo, Monaco. First, of course, there was Saturday's qualifying, and as always in Monaco, it was a big news week for Formula One.
We got some great stuff starting out with Ferrari. This team is just a shambles in every sense of the word. Carlos Sainz started the week with an injury scare because there's this traditional pre-race charity football match that goes on. We're talking football like European soccer. Football. Yeah. The Spaniard was seen riding the pine, which for folks like me means sitting on the bench, with a wrap around his upper leg. So everyone was like, oh no, please don't tell me that Carlos is injured, that he's going to like have a bad weekend because he's got a hurt leg. But it seemed to be pretty fine. And then there was Charles Leclerc, who tripped and fell on his own face.
Yes,
on his own face while attempting to do a slide tackle. Funniest photo I think I've ever seen.
These Ferrari boys have the funniest sports photos ever. Like Charles on his face, and then Carlos from last year's Miami Grand Prix with that football helmet doing the salute. Like,
it's so funny. The funniest thing in the world.
Anyway, we need to get them doing more sports.
It's like, so
obviously,
good.
F1's not going great for them right now. Put them in some other things and let's just see what happens.
Oh, man, they should have done that instead of the Grand Prix on Sunday.
They should have. Because Ferrari's race and performance on Saturday was not ideal. Sainz got eighth place on the starting grid for the race, and Leclerc ended up sixth. But he ended up with a three-place grid penalty for impeding McLaren's Lando Norris, and Norris was on his hot lap, so obviously we had to take Charles from third, drop him down to sixth, because why does the home driver need to be happy?
Yeah.
Aston Martin also had an interesting time. So they made waves leading up to the race weekend with the announcement that they'll be partnering with Honda for the 2026 season.
And that'll not just any kind of partnership. This is a works deal.
Yes,
they're going
this
to be
is a works deal.
Team.
Yeah, so this is a works deal. And this will replace their current deal, which is a customer deal from Mercedes, which basically means Mercedes makes the power units and the guts for the car. And they go, hey, Mercedes, we're going to buy that from you. So they will be a Honda works team. Honda has an interesting history in Formula One, including recent history. So they're returning after a very, very long break. They exited the sport after the 2021 season. Mm-hmm. And you will remember that 2021 was the year that Max won the title with a Honda power unit. And now Max is just dominating. It would have been really great to stay with Red Bull, basically. And they did not. So this was an interesting time because Honda left Formula One in 2008. And then they come back in 2015, and it was ugly, right? So they're powering Fernando Alonso's car. So Fernando Alonso is currently with Aston. If he stays through 2026, which is completely plausible because this man will race in Formula One forever, it'll be them reuniting after a weird time. So in this first run with Fernando and Honda, those engines failed constantly. Like McLaren, Honda, it was a bad deal. And then they start to come into success with Red Bull, right? And then as soon as that happens, they leave. And now they're coming back. So the 2026 return basically falls in line with when F1 says it will be running on more sustainable fuel, not derived from fossil carbon. The power output will still be more than 1,000 horsepower, but a lot more of that output will come from an electric motor on board. You know, it's going to be more sustainable. Honda's going to feel better about it.
It's also going to help develop. One of the things, I was in the press conference where they announced this, and one of the big things is like pushing for a lot more of that advanced hybrid development. Because obviously we're moving toward electrification and road cars, but there are a lot of people who are still kind of holding back on going fully electric. Having that hybrid power is going to kind of help bridge the gap a little bit, but we'll see how that goes. I'm sure it'll be fine.
I have some beef with Honda because they have a commercial that says, "You said we'd never make road cars, and we did. You said we'd never win Formula One in a hybrid, and we did." And I'm like, everyone was in a hybrid. Like, you weren't in a hybrid to, like, it's be in a hybrid.
Yeah. Kind of a misnomer, little misleading.
Especially now that the whole world watches Formula One. We know better. So Fernando Alonso, back when he was with Honda, they had this very strained relationship. In 2015, he had this famous quote where he called the Honda power unit a GP2 engine, which basically means it was really bad. And he actually expressed regret for this even before this whole announcement came. It was like 2020. He said, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have said that. That wasn't great. We'll see if he's still around by 2026. It's totally possible. Yeah, he totally will. This dude will be driving in Formula One when he's 70, and he will just be angrier and just wilder than ever. I just know
He'll be like the Solid Snake of Formula One.
Yes.
For all you Metal Gear Solid fans out there. I've never actually played the games.
It's like...
When I got my PS3, I played like the first 4 hours of Metal Gear Solid 4 and was like, you know what? I don't know if this is for me. But I watch a lot of YouTube videos about it because I'm still very interested in the story of the games.
I was talking to my husband about this last night because Tony Kanaan is an IndyCar driver who is retiring after this Indy 500. Allegedly, this is like the third time he said he's retiring. And I was like, why don't drivers just drive? Then my husband was like, yeah, like I want someone who's in there until they have to force him out of the car. Mm-hmm. Like someone who you have to physically be lifted from the machine because you can no longer drive, but you still want to just stick around because you've got the money and you can keep paying for people to run you. I think we need more of that. And I think Fernando should be that guy.
Fernando Alonso was in top form in qualifying. He went at Max Verstappen for the pole. He didn't get it. Max got it. But he did a lot better than his teammate, Lance Stroll, who qualified 14th.
Yeah, not a very impressive run from Lance. McLaren shocked the grid by unveiling a divisive new livery, celebrating 60 years of racing excellence and the company's success in the triple crown of motorsport. That's Le Mans, Indy 500, and Monaco. The paint job powered the drivers to an astounding 10th and 11th on the grid, with Lando leading the charge for the British team. Liz, you got some thoughts on this?
I have a conspiracy corner.
Oh, okay.
I do. Okay. I have a conspiracy corner. As we have seen multiple times this year, the F1 McLaren program has struggled, and the IndyCar program has done very well. we sacrificed a Pato Award win, a McLaren win in the Indy 500, so that these guys could qualify 10th and 11th and also finish pretty well. It's sad, and it had to happen, and then Pato crashed, and he almost got there.
I was rooting for him, that Pato Award.
I was too. I really like Pato. He's my San Antonio hometown boy, so I gotta root for him.
Lee Diffie on the NBC team.
Uh-oh. As soon as you say Lee Diffie, I'm like, uh-oh.
Loves to say the Young Mexican Pato Award. Cannot say Pato Award without prefacing that he's the Young Mexican.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about when he gets, like, at what point is there a cutoff for young?
When do you become the old Mexican?
That's what I'm thinking about. Yeah.
When do we flip the switch?
Because I don't know how old Pato is.
Pato's like in
his
early 20s.
Okay.
Is
so he's still
really?
Young. But once he hits like 25, that's not so young.
No way.
No, when he hits 30, I want
Elizabeth,
him.
He's 24 years old.
He's in his early 20s. He's younger than me.
He's younger than me too.
He was born in 1999. He was born the same year as my brother. That's disgusting.
He's competing to be the last person alive from the 1900s.
That's crazy.
When he turns like 30, I want Lee Diffie to refer to him as the middle-aged Mexican. And then we'll move on from there.
Contract negotiations between Lewis Hamilton and AMG Mercedes came to its biggest head so far in the run-up to the Monaco Grand Prix. There was rumors of talks between the British driver and Ferrari sweeping social media, but by the end of the week, Lewis himself confirmed there had been no offer from the Italian Scuderia, telling Sky Sports, quote, "Naturally, when you're in contract negotiations, there's always going to be speculation. Ultimately, unless you hear from me, that's all it is."
Oh.
Lewis is seeking an extension on his contract, which is set to expire after the 2023 season. The driver, who was also a knight, qualified sixth, but then because of Leclerc's penalty, got bumped up to fifth place.
Good for him.
Pretty cool. Yeah. And finally, the top story of qualifying at Monaco, the two-time champ and Red Bull driver Max Verstappen put in a legendary lap in Saturday's qualifying session, nearly missing out on the top spot before somehow finding nearly 0.3 of a second in the final sector of the lap, the shortest on the calendar, mind you, the shortest final sector, beating Alonso by less than 0.100 seconds. The instant classic lap put Max in excellent position for Sunday. It is seriously, it was one of the sickest Q3 sessions of the year. Always a good time at Monaco qualifying.
And the whole grid was in a Red Bull sandwich, mind you.
They were.
Because Checo had some real issues, so he started last.
His race was Bad News Bears.
It was Bad News Bears.
Liz. Yeah. So as always, Monaco qualifying was very exciting. Which led to a mixed bag of a race, we'll just say that.
Yeah. Oof. That first lap, we saw plenty of drama, as you do at Monaco. At the back of the pack, Haas's Nico Hülkenberg made contact with the Williams of American rookie Logan Sargeant. That incident then made things hard for the backmarkers as they entered the iconic Mirabeau downhill hairpin as the pack slowed to a crawl.
This was so funny because, like, they're having all these issues. And then poor Checo in last is just like, oh, I guess somebody's getting in front of me with a shopping cart. And it's like you're in a parking lot and, like, someone just comes out of nowhere and you have to stop.
Yep.
This dude is probably bored out of his mind. It's just a testament to the fact that you cannot pass at Monaco. Where you start is where you're going to end unless you do something stupid.
These cars are, I mean, this is the reason for another reason for the revised 2026 rules. The cars are just comically large.
Yes.
I don't think it's ever been more apparent than this race, this season.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like they're driving Suburbans around that track.
It's
compared
really funny
to like the Formula E cars, much smaller footprint on those Formula E cars. I can wait until 2026 because I want to savor these years that I have right now, but I'm definitely looking forward to that season. It's going to be good.
So, typical Monaco fashion, those opening laps were the most exciting, but then it didn't take long for pole sitter Max Verstappen to build a healthy multi-second lead over Fernando Alonso. But I do want to note that this year, the broadcast was not done by Monaco.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, this was usually done by people in Monaco. Formula One took over the race broadcast this year. So the opening laps actually looked kind of sick because you could get a sense of what the track looked like and what the cars looked like on it.
The helicopter view was sick.
Dude. I was like, wow, I think I've seen Monaco for the first time. Like, the last time I saw Monaco this good was in John Frankenheimer's 1966 film Grand Prix.
Wow.
Oh, the the movie I saw at the club a few weeks
ago.
At the
club. Yeah. Yeah.
The club.
What was really interesting was we had this book meetup and we said, all right, we're going to stay for 30 minutes and then we're going to go watch Monaco. We stayed for 2 hours because it was so fun. But we watched the opening lap of Monaco on a phone and the whole group, we had multiple phones and the whole group were just, everyone was crowding around the phones. And we get through about half of the first lap and then we're like, okay, it's over. And then everybody put their phone up.
Yeah.
That's the best way to watch Monaco. I'm not going to lie. Like, you watch the first little bit on your phone and then someone inevitably halfway through your hangout is like, oh crap, something happened. And you all pick your phone back up and you like see what happened.
That's
and then
exactly
you're like, oh, it wasn't actually that. It rained, but nothing else happened. So we're just put the phones back.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Carlos Sainz had a bit of a brown pants moment while trying to pass the Alpine of Esteban Ocon, nearly plowing into the back of the Frenchman while attempting to make a super late pass going into the post-tunnel chicane. I don't know the name of that corner. Don't quiz me on it. I don't care. The incident left Sainz with a damaged wing and a bruised ego. He went on to race with a broken wing for a couple more laps before, I think, coming in for a new one.
That was rough. I saw that happen and I was like, okay, that was certainly a move. And even the commentary booth was just like,
yeah,
that wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
Don't know why he did that.
When you get everybody in the booth being like, I don't know why he did that, you're like, oh, I guess it was pretty stupid.
Oh, that must have been pretty bad. So we're going to skip from the first couple of laps all the way to lap 55 because nothing happened in between like lap one and the rain on lap 55.
I think I fell asleep, which is not a good look for someone who's supposed to watch the entirety of the race and report it to thy listener. Honestly, though, then I like to make sure that I didn't miss anything important. I also went back the race highlights on YouTube.
And nothing happened.
It's an 8-minute video. And one of the highlights is Esteban Ocon coming into the pits and having a slightly slower pit stop than usual.
Damn.
And nothing of, I'm not joking, nothing of consequence happens. But that was included in the highlight reel for this race.
You got to hit that. We have an 8-minute time limit. We have to hit it. Just throw in Esteban. Just do it.
It was rough. So round lap 55, some stuff starts to happen.
Yes.
Okay.
Some interesting stuff.
We were talking about God earlier in this episode. God is watching Monaco and God goes, God, this is boring. And he starts making it rain. And the rain starts coming down. And the fun thing about Formula One, which, you know, most of the time, I will say that Formula One's racing regulations are usually more boring than other series. But the fun thing about Formula One is that when it starts raining, they're just like, all you, do what you want. So rain starts falling. Everybody's like, what do we do? What do we do? Most of the field comes in and they take intermediate tires. In a defining move of the race, as the rain is starting but is not fully here yet, Fernando Alonso comes in and he puts on mediums.
Yes.
Like, we are two laps away from a full-on downpour, and Aston Martin is like, mediums.
Mm-hmm.
That's the move.
That was a, I'm pretty sure I saw that was an Aston Martin call, not a Fernando call. He was kind of questioning whether that was the right move or not.
Yep, it did not go super well. So the rain picks up just a couple laps later, and Fernando has to come back in to switch to intermediate tires. And had he not done that, you know, he would have been closer to Max at the end. We wouldn't have had a 27-second win by Max Verstappen.
But we probably still would have had a win by multiple
seconds. We still would have had a win, but it would have been about 12.
Well, no, he would have had to pass at Monaco.
That's true. You know, it would have been more interesting. So this rain causes complete chaos on the track. Drivers are coming in to switch their dry tires for intermediates, but some are simply not.
They're just waiting it out.
So Carlos Sainz almost bent his car before he came in for intermediates. Other drivers who had trouble included Yuki Tsunoda. This poor guy was having so much trouble with his brakes. Uh-huh. And his team was like, Yuki, we're going to instruct you on what to do. And Yuki goes, are you trying to make me crash?
Yeah.
George Russell had issues. And Lance Stroll had yes. more issues than most of the rest of the people out
yeah.
there.
Yeah. I mean, he was at Mirabeau again and hits a wall, understeers into the wall at the lower Ouch. Hairpin. The front wing actually detaches from the nose. Lance does not realize this. The wing portion gets stuck under his front tires, and you can see him trying to like steer his car. And the wheels are moving, but it's not doing anything because they're not actually touching the ground. So he goes straight and crashes into another wall, which dislodges the wing and finally lets him steer again. And it was like the clumsiest, like all respect to Lance. It was comical the way it went down.
Lap 62, the commentator booth goes, Lance is 8 laps down from the field. Maybe he is out of the race. I haven't seen him for a while.
Yeah.
And then, like, we cut to a shot of Lance walking back to the pits near the yachts on the water. Mm-hmm. And they're like, this is the first retirement of the race. But they had no idea. Like, they yeah. didn't know whether he was out there or not. They were just like, yeah, we're not sure. Maybe.
It was almost the first Monaco Grand Prix without a retirement. It was yeah. looking like that was going to happen.
And then we got two. We slid right in there at the end. So Carlos and Charles Leclerc staying out on slicks. And they're so slow. Like, mm-hmm. it's horrible. I can't imagine going that slowly in a Formula One car. So funny. And then a bunch of the other drivers look like they're on a go-kart slick track. So, like, Kevin Magnussen, by lap 57, pretty much everyone is on intermediates by now. This dude is still on hards on lap 57 and 58. He's the only one out there still on slicks. And he is just sliding around, hitting some stuff. Some of the other drivers are hitting stuff. Everybody's hitting stuff except Max Verstappen, pretty much, is what's going on.
It was pretty amazing just to see how hapless these cars are without
yes.
rain tires on.
You would think when it starts raining, go put on intermediate, which is between dry and wet, or wet tires. You think mm-hmm. that's an obvious choice. It's raining. The problem is that you take a risk, especially when you think it might be a short shower, mm-hmm. because those slick tires have no tread on them. That is the ideal running condition for a race car. Dry track, slick tires, no tread. You get intermediates that have a little bit of tread on them so that you can stick to the ground and you have some grip.
Evacuate water.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then the full wets have those deeper grooves that rooster tail the water behind the car. So basically you're trying to get the water away from the tire and get more grip. But if you think a shower might be short, you might take a couple of laps of going slower on slick tires than change to intermediates. Because the problem is if the track dries up, you're screwed on tires with tread. So you have to do this mental battle of, is it worth putting on wet tires or intermediate tires to potentially burn them up in a couple of laps? Or should I stay out here and play go-kart slick track and wait for the track to dry anyway?
That's how it goes. And that was the most interesting part of the race, for sure.
Absolutely. And then Kevin Magnussen, who was our last guy out there on slick tires, he finally pits for full wets, not intermediates, full wets. And on lap 60, he wrecks on full wets.
God
bless. And it was like, my guy, this is a mess. We had a bunch of penalties, too. There was a lot going on. There was a lot of like, so at some point, George Russell gets a penalty and Lewis Hamilton is directly in front of him. And he says, let me pass Lewis and I won't go 5 seconds ahead of him. But I just don't want Charles Leclerc, who is behind me, to catch me. So we're basically just preserving my position after the penalty. And Mercedes goes, Charles is 7.2 seconds back. We're not going to do that. Have fun.
George loves trying to just get that free spot.
I really think it's a matter of when it's not super consequential, slowly getting Mercedes into the habit of team orders go both ways. Because if it doesn't matter, ultimately this doesn't matter. It's fourth and fifth or whatever. No one really cares. But if George can get them to agree now, can he push a little further later?
Yeah.
Ooh, I think it's really trying to establish we're not one and two. We're going to do stuff for both of us and kind of change the narrative there.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't even think about it from that perspective. I mean, I would definitely want to be like establishing not necessarily my dominance, but my ability to like influence the race decisions from the,
yes.
the strategic point of view.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I saw happening because throughout this whole race, like George is kind of in their ear trying to get them to do stuff he wants them to do this whole race. Because ultimately, like this race, you're going to finish where you start. So whatever, you might as well try it. I think George is a thinker. I think he's a politician. And he is like,
yeah,
I got to get them.
He's class president.
Yeah, he's class president. He is, you don't know he's manipulating you, but he is.
He's probably got some good people in his corner too, like his support staff that are like, hey man, like, this is a smart thing to do strategically, you know?
And if it makes sense, then Mercedes has to say no to a move that makes complete sense, because ultimately Lewis is not going to gain or lose anything from this. And George potentially could gain something from this. So it's about getting Mercedes to say no to something that doesn't make sense for them to say no to.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. But he ideally wanted to back them into a position, I think, to say yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I think. I think George Russell's over there scheming. He's got his divorced dad outfits on. He's scheming. He's finding a way to get that extra money in the divorce settlement. Like, mm-hmm. he's figuring it out over there. He's smart. He's been through this before. Lap 71 of 78, around there, Max actually hits the wall. He's 27 seconds up from the field. I don't know if Max is just programmed this way to where he can't chill, or if he was like having a track day because he was 27 seconds ahead of the field, but he clips the wall and then just keeps going. Like, he risked something by not just chilling.
Mm-hmm.
That's that racer mindset you got to have to be world champion. You got to be pushing 100% all the time.
I guess so.
I think moments like that, hear me out for a sec. A popular story in Formula One is kind of the Senna versus Alain Prost. You had Senna, who was famously like a hothead behind the wheel. You know, that famous quote that everyone loves to throw out there. If you no longer go for a gap that exists, then you are no longer a race
there
driver.
There you go.
Is
I
that
was
it?
Waiting.
Okay.
Yeah.
It also ignores some of the context of that quote and the fact that Senna crashed a lot. and then you have Alain Prost, who is a more kind of cool-headed, calculating guy, definitely had a reputation, or there's a perception of him being like a conniving kind of politician, you know, bending the rules in his favor. I think there's a big chance that Max, with these kinds of moments, 10 years after he's left the sport, there will be a re-examination of Max where people won't be mad about him dominating so much anymore. He'll have that same kind of Senna feel, I think. That same kind of reputation.
Senna with daddy issues.
Kind of a hothead master who just always went 100%, even if it meant that he was going to crash at Monaco with 27 second lead over the rest of the field, you know?
That's interesting. It's interesting to think about how we're going to perceive him however many years from now. And he's like, well, retired, sitting back, feet up.
I think Max likes being like miserable for the opportunity at being the best.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he will be at, like, local rallies being like,
no,
right.
You know what he's going to do? He's going to get a position on an F1 team. Like, he's going to be, like, a Helmut Marko in the future. He's
oh,
just
no.
Gonna be. Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's also the qualifying session on Saturday where he was able to make up that difference in such a short amount of time that, you know, it was a different kind of feeling. There's some weekends when Max gets pole and you're just like, okay, yeah, it's Max. Like, yeah, he's fastest. He's the best, obviously. Like, okay, that wasn't exciting. But then he does something like that and you're like, oh, no, he's not just like the best. He's like a GOAT tier driver, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's cool to be reminded of that.
I think this race was pretty interesting from like several perspectives. I think we got to see
not from the watching Max perspective, that's for
no,
sure.
No. That's true. But from like a breakdown perspective, we got to see Max being Max, risking everything for nothing. We got to see Esteban Ocon, who got on the podium, being happier than literally anyone else ever about getting third. So like Max is just standing here with his hands behind his back like, yep, I won another race. And Esteban Ocon is that meme of the guy celebrating on the podium and he got third.
Mm-hmm.
That is exactly what Esteban looked like. And like Elizabeth said, the broadcast quality was very interesting to be able to watch that. And then I had the realization that I like Formula One a lot better when I'm watching it with other people. I have not watched a Formula One race late in probably a couple of years, and I don't miss it. I will wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning just so I can watch it with other people on my phone.
I was gonna say, it's so much better when you have like the communal watching experience of it. But like when I watch it live, I always feel like I'm so much more engaged because I'm like, I need to post my way through this. I need to like interact with other people who are saying things. And if it's like not an exciting race or not engaging, I'm at least engaging with people who are talking about that. You know what I mean? So
we're miserable in company. So this race, it was certainly a race at Monaco. I'd say that in the most critical way possible. The only real super fun time we got was those few laps of the rain where everybody went into goblin mode and they were trying to survive. Fortunately for them, but unfortunately for us, the rain stopped not very long after and everything went back to normal. And Max Verstappen won. Yeah. Fernando Alonso got second. Esteban Ocon got third. And our guy Lewis Hamilton got the extra point for fastest lap.
Oh.
So Fernando Alonso got second. He is now only 12 points behind Sergio Perez in the Drivers' Championship after Checo himself had a very disappointing 16th place finish, which shows basically how much you cannot pass at Monaco, considering they have the most dominant car in the entire world. We had Esteban Ocon and the Alpine running at the podium, which is his first time on the podium in Monaco. And boy, was he jazzed about it. Lewis Hamilton and George Russell finished the top five, possibly hinting at some improvement for Mercedes. In sixth, we had Charles Leclerc. And then following that, we had Gasly, Sainz, Norris, and McLaren rookie Oscar Piastri taking the last points-paying position in 10th place.
Well done, Oscar.
Good for Oscar. Oscar got some points. Oh my goodness.
Pato did it for you guys, so you better be happy.
Pato sacrificed himself so that y'all could get points. Ouch.
All right. Let's lace up those trainers, get that Apple Fitness app going. It's time for our track walk, everybody. It's the Spanish Grand Prix next weekend. I'm super stoked. The Circuit de Barcelona, Catalunya was built in preparation for the 1992 Barcelona Olympics. And the first race took place there in 1991 as part of the Spanish Touring Car Championship. 2 weeks later, it was Formula One's time to shine. The track has a mix of high and low speed corners, and drivers love it, which is good, because they spend quite a bit of time there during winter testing. Guys, what do you think about Circuit de Barcelona, Catalunya?
I like it now because of how you've said it. This is a track that I do enjoy. It's not one of my favorites, but it's one of those ones where it comes on, I'm like, oh yeah, I always have a good time watching this race. So we've got those back-to-back race weekends going on, so it's going to be interesting to see how we've got that turnaround coming from Monaco to this one, where Monaco is pretty tough, and I feel like it's probably one of the more mentally straining weekends of the year for everyone trying to like get that build-up and all of the swankiness and whatever. So I'll be interested to see how it like transitions.
Spanish Grand Prix, definitely looking forward to that. Probably going to see another Red Bull 1-2 maybe. But, you know, Fernando, being the Spaniard,
yes,
he might pull some out.
Do you think he could actually win a race?
No.
I
don't think he's going to win this one. But I think we could see, potentially, the two Spaniards powered by the love of their home country getting on the podium, which would be nice. Then we could just, like, forget about the guy in the middle and we could have fun. Because the other two are going to be going nuts, which would be great.
I would love to see that. So definitely pulling for Sainz and Alonso. But that sounds like they're my boyfriends of the week. But guess what? They're not. It's time to reveal our boyfriends of the week in this week's edition of Boyfriend of the Week. That's right. It's middle school rules, boyfriend for the week only. Who do you guys got? You know what? I'll start it off. How about that?
Okay, go. You're stoked.
Esteban Ocon.
Oh, you stole mine.
Oh, we're not being very creative today.
Well, he's a likable.
I thought you were going to say he's a ladies' man.
He's kind of a goofy dude, doing his best, gets on the podium at Monaco after, mind you, getting smacked in the rear by Carlos Sainz early on, almost spun his car. He recovered. Nothing else happened. So good job, Stebby. We love you.
We love Stebby.
He's got the juice. We know that. And I will always root for Esteban Ocon. I will always love to see Esteban Ocon doing well.
What flavor of juice do you think Stebby drinks with his breakfast?
I don't know. Oh, he's French.
Pomegranate.
It's a mimosa. I assume the French drink mimosas. That's wildly ignorant of me to assume that.
Are mimosas even French?
I don't know. I just made the champagne connection. I might ask for a mimosa while I'm over in France and get a glass of water.
The mimosa actually came from France. I Googled it.
Oh, thank God.
Esteban also took his mom to the Cannes Film Festival, which I thought was really sweet, like in the build up to Monaco. So he brought her as his date and they were all dressed up. And that was part of why I had selected him. But now I'm going to think about a new one. So I'm going to have a new one. Alanis, who do you have?
My boyfriend of the week is the crane operator at Monaco.
Oh. That's a good one.
The crane operator. So what happens in Monaco is because it's a very tight street circuit, as we know, because no one can pass and everybody is driving Suburbans. The crane operator at Monaco is tasked with, if a car wrecks and they cannot get off of the track, you lift them up with a crane.
Mm-hmm.
So this weekend was a particularly fun one because we had Checo's Red Bull lifted. We had a Mercedes lifted. We had all this happen before the race. And the crane operator lifted these cars up so high that everybody started taking photos of the floors. And if you've ever been around race teams, the last thing they want is for you to see the underside of that race car, because that's going to give away something. And all the team principals are freaking out. So I think at one point, it was Toto Wolff said the crane operator must work for Cirque du Soleil with how they were lifting these cars up in the air and twirling them around to show everyone the undersides. So everyone was super mad at the crane operator. I thought it was great. So thank you, crane operator. I appreciate you.
So I would like to pick every single person who came to our book signing at the 500 as our boyfriend of the week collectively, but I'm going to single out one gentleman because I need to know who you are. This gentleman's got this shirt on the front. It says Formula One is afraid of Mario Andretti and Cadillac. And I was like, oh my God, that shirt's incredible. And he's like, just wait. Rips off his backpack. On the back, it says, what the f*** is a kilometer? And he was like, can you guys sign this?
That's awesome.
And we did.
So we signed his shirt, but I don't know who it is. And we've both posted photos of this shirt and no one has come forward.
So let's set up the scene here. So we have this book meetup and everybody's around us. And this group comes up and it's what the f*** is a kilometer? And their two friends. And their two friends are just like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And they come up to us and they're like, love you. Can you sign my shirt? And we're like, yeah. And then they just take off.
Yeah.
Like, we never got an introduction. We never got anything.
I never got their name.
Just gone.
Just
gone.
A jug of water. The other one had like a family size bag of Doritos.
Yes.
Like, these people knew how to show up for the racetrack. And I just, like, I need to know, what is your name? Please let me know your name. This is my Cinderella story. You are my glass slipper, and I am trying to find you. Please.
Please, if that was you, send us an email at donutracingshow@donutmedia.com. We miss you. We love you. We want to know your name.
You can't be my boyfriend without a name.
You need a name.
Maybe you can.
Or maybe you can. It's a secret. Ooh.
All right.
Thanks for listening to the Donut Racing Show. We're going to be back next week to talk about the Spanish Grand Prix.
In the meantime, make sure to subscribe and tell all your friends to tune into the Donut Racing Show. If you want to leave us a 5-star and kindly worded review, it really helps us out. We also have an email address. Like I said, it's donutracingshow@donutmedia.com. Anybody can email us, but particularly if you are wearing that shirt, we want you to email us. We want to also start reading some fun stuff on the air. So if you hit us up at the email or you leave a cool review that we can read, we would love to do that.
Yes, if you're not familiar with Donut, we also have a YouTube channel as well as an automotive history show called Past Gas. You can check that one out. One of the top automotive shows in the world. I will keep reminding everybody that because it's awesome.
Whoa.
Follow DRS on Twitter at Donut Racing Show. Follow Alanis at Alanis N. King on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Liz at Eliz_Blackstock on Twitter and Eliza Blackstock on IG. And you can follow me at Nolan J. Sykes on both. We'll see you next time.
Bye.